In this retreat, I spoke about various subjects. But without even me trying to emphasize it, somehow all these meditations were eventually revealing and pointing to the unique importance of the external person. At the conception of the division that I made between the internal, external, and innermost person, I did not really myself understand the deeper implications behind. And now these implications become more and more clear. The external person is the center of the outer mind, of the external intelligence, the human consciousness, and the human identity. So obviously his presence constitutes the majority of our experience as we live in that human consciousness, as we use our mind on a daily basis. Initially, external person is very much tied to the internal person, but gradually the internal person becomes even further internalized. He begins to serve as the center of intelligence, which is independent from our human consciousness. That is more universal or transcendent. In regards to our human consciousness, it is obviously still a personal center, profoundly personal, but it is not a human center. So understanding of the person is not just a matter of grasping different conceptual subtleties in this regard. It changes as the person evolves. As that center of intelligence evolves and divides itself into different compartments, and as that evolution deepens, that which at the beginning was just a poor, fragmented extension of the internal person, which is the external person, becomes increasingly autonomous, independent. So, in a way, the external person begin to represent what initially we described as the person himself. While the internal and innermost person, they become something else. Something so deep in our consciousness that it is almost difficult to associate with the conception of the person as it was at the beginning. The internal person, which eventually the distinction between the internal person and the innermost person in the deepest level of realization, such as when the primordial person is realized, he becomes the person of the ultimate reality. He still has a connection to our human consciousness from afar, but he exists on another plane. Consciousness and intelligence. So as you begin to understand who the person is, you need to understand also how he changes in the course of his evolution. Which means how you change in the course of your evolution as the person. Because after all, the person is the main center of your identity. He is the very answer to the question, who am I? But for now, I have been emphasizing the evolution and transformation of the external person, because he, as much as he himself transforms, he still resembles very much the concept of the person as we had it from the very beginning. He is the thinker. Within the external intelligence, he is the one who relates to personality. He is the center of personality. He is the center of the human character. He is the center of the human emotion. He basically becomes all the things that we initially were relating to the concept of the person. But for that to happen, the internal person has to himself undergo deep transformation and enter come closer at least to his very origin, which is the primordial I am. But the transformation of the external person is not a simple byproduct of the transformation of the internal person. That transformation has to happen within the external person himself, and it starts from the very beginning of the spiritual path. and we were pointing to it in different ways in the teaching, even though that understanding was not yet clearly formulated, such as becoming conscious in the external attention, or realizing the identity of the external attention as the external person. Because the fact is that it is very common that not just people, because people are generally unconscious, but our students tend to be unconscious in the external person. Which means, which results in the conflict of identity between pure consciousness and the human psychological dimension. We cannot integrate pure consciousness with activity, and so on and so on. Because there's something blocking them from becoming conscious in the external person. And that is interesting in itself. I spoke many times about the fact that before we enter spiritual path, before we activate our spiritual intention, before the internal knower enters our existence, the person has to be conscious. Perhaps not fully yet realized, because for the person to be fully realized, we need to have a base subjectivity in the other centers of the soul, starting from pure consciousness. But he has to be conscious enough. So I spoke about the internal person being conscious enough, innermost person being conscious enough, and being capable of generating continuity of mindfulness, remembrance of our pure subjectivity. Because if there is no continuity in the innermost attention, how can you expect to have continuity in pure attention? Impossible. But the thing is that the journey starts paradoxically with the external person being conscious. Not fully conscious, not fully realized. Because external person also needs the foundation of our pure subjectivity to become fully conscious of himself. But he has to be conscious enough. I already shared that experience that I had so many times when in private meetings, personal meetings, where, for instance, I was checking the state of pure consciousness of my students. They were able to be in pure consciousness, but the moment they started to use their mind, like speaking, communicating their thoughts, instantaneously, the external person was becoming completely, and I mean completely, unconscious. So for many students, I mean at the beginning of the path at least, making the external person conscious is actually the greatest challenge. In a way, it is a greater challenge than to make pure consciousness conscious, to keep pure consciousness. There's something there so inherently unconscious in the external person that the adepts who follow the path, they just cannot transform it. Not just they cannot transform it, they are so much not in touch with the external person that they are not even able to identify that he is unconscious. It's like a blind, another blind spot in consciousness, because it's so close to who they are. Because people, in general, are external person. So when you talk to anyone, you talk to their external person. There's no one else there. It's just external person. You can perhaps feel something deeper in these people. You can feel their heart and so on. But who they are fundamentally in their identity is the external person. And that external person is completely unconscious. He can experience moments of lucidity. But this lucidity does not mean that he is conscious. It means that he is conscious in respect to his activities, which is the very minimum how people experience the very relative conscious mind or conscious interactions, or when they can become more conscious within their personality, like a little bit stepping back from their personality and being able to look what is really happening there. But this does not make the external person conscious. He is still unconscious. So a very interesting question comes to mind. Can we trace the very beginning of our spiritual development by gauging, by verifying how much the external person has evolved, how close he is to his sense of self, how conscious he is. And I believe so. So, if a new student comes to the teaching, now we have a very closed group, so we are not open to the general population of spiritual seekers, but still occasionally it happens. If a new student comes, me as a teacher, I would look not if he has access to pure consciousness, because in most likelihood he does not, not that he is conscious in the internal person, that in, because in most likelihood he is not, but I would look how conscious he is in the external person. At that point he cannot be fully conscious, but still the question remains how conscious he is, how in touch he is with the external person. Is there enough substance in his external person? Because indeed, that is the foundation, the very beginning. Which will determine all the steps that follow. So all of those students, I mean, my students are wonderful and many of them make amazing progress, but all of those who are struggling, for instance, with pure consciousness, what is the cause of it? They cannot meet pure consciousness. They are controlling pure consciousness too much through the person, or through the internal attention. I've been trying to decipher, to find out, to conceptualize, to reach clarity what actually causes all these problems. in something which is relatively simple. Realizing pure consciousness is not a rocket science. Well, it is in this reality. In this reality, it's like going to another galaxy. But from the technical standpoint, it is a relatively simple practice. So I've been trying to understand, because it's part of my job to understand my students, so I can help them. Not just to speak from above, from some kind of a cloud. Like Nisargadatta Maharaj being astonished and shocked that his followers do not understand that they are the Absolute. You could not understand them, so you are shocked, because from his standpoint, whatever he interpreted as the Absolute was a very simple realization, something obvious and self-evident. He could not find the bridge. He could not empathically understand the general state of unconsciousness of people, which is extremely important. In order to be a teacher, you need to understand not just yourself, you need to understand others, their problems and their limitations. Anyway, coming to the point, perhaps the answer to the fact that some people struggle with pure consciousness originates in their external person being overly unconscious. Don't forget that the evolution of the person starts from the external person, because this is the universal sense of self for every human being, and not just human being, any creature on this planet. Because as I made so important clarification that there is no such a thing as subconscious me. There is just subconscious person. A frog. Oh, let's come closer home to creatures which we can more relate to, a dog. His external person is completely subconscious. But he has external person. So basically, this is the universal sense of self for all humans, and I mean for all humans. And the evolution starts from that place, from that sense of self of the external person. Of course, it is intertwined with the evolution of intelligence of the external person. But the essence of that evolution is the development of sense of me in the external person, internalized to such a degree that it facilitates awakening of the internal person and the innermost person. If the external person is completely dumb, completely unintelligent, and completely unconscious, he is unable to create connection to the internal person and the innermost person and the soul. He can pretend to be spiritual, because this is what most people are. External unconscious person following the path of Buddhism or Advaita. But this is so false and so fake. You need to first build a base. Before aspiring to transcend, to reach liberation, to reach samadhi, to reach nirvana, you need to create the base in the person. So here we go. How conscious is the external person? How much he is in touch with himself at the very beginning of the spiritual path. And I would like you to contemplate this in respect to like remembering how it was at the beginning for you. Can you remember that? Can you have some kind of a sense of it? How conscious was your external person? And how much you were in touch with the external person? Isn't that a fascinating question? I can just tell you from my experience that since very childhood, I was fully conscious in the external person. It's not that my external person was fully realized, because as we know, so many other elements need to be in place, or at least I was fully conscious in the external person. Meaning, I already had the foundation. The fact that I was lost for many years is not due to the lack of the foundation, but due to the lack of proper guidance and energetic access to different states of consciousness, but the foundation was there. So the question is, did you have the foundation from the beginning? Or even now, a few of you maybe still lack that foundation. Or there is not enough consciousness in the external person. There's something disjoint in the person. Can it be fixed? Let's assume that someone does not have this foundation and the person is just, external person is completely unconscious. Can it be fixed? Can it be rectified? And the answer is, it can. But you need to pay attention to that part of yourself. So let's assume that you are trying to reach desperately pure consciousness, and you keep failing, or you have this what we call identity conflict. Perhaps you should go back to the external person. Give it some attention. Give it some love. Embrace it as an important part of who you are. So the bottom line is, if the external person is completely unconscious, nothing will work for you. And your spiritual path will be a struggle. Furthermore, you will never develop intelligent relationship with the mind, because the external person is the center of the mind. He's not just a thinker, he is the thinker of the mind. Because there is no mind other than external person thinking. Furthermore, you will never become human. So many people speak about being human, or how wonderful it is to be human, or how important it is to be human, or that we should not just surrender to our spiritual reality because being human is just as important. They have no idea what they are talking about. They defile the very meaning behind the concept of being human. They taint it with a distorted perception. How can you be human if external person is not conscious? He is, after all, the scent of human consciousness. He is the human person. Of course, the realization of the human consciousness, its awakening, requires all these additional elements, because as I have explained, if you actualize human consciousness, you need to actualize the etheric person, and then awaken the base subjectivity of human consciousness. But here we speak about the complete awakening of human consciousness. But you can experience being human, your human identity, before the complete awakening of human consciousness. It is basically that you are not experiencing your human consciousness in a complete way. You're experiencing it in a fragmented way, but you are still able to experience being human. And you should be able to experience being human at the beginning of the path. In a similar way as you should be able to experience a substantial level of presence and consciousness in the external person at the beginning of the path. Not just at the end of the path. At the end of the path, your experience of the external person becomes more complete, more sublime, but he should be conscious, relatively conscious, enough conscious from the beginning. So the external person, as I said, initially when I made this division between the three parts of the person, I did not foresee the profound implications of it. So in a way it comes as a surprise to me as well. I'm not planning these things, they just come. And you may be surprised by certain things, that certain concepts change, or certain perception changes. Our inner reality. But the thing is, I'm surprised too. I'm just thinking to myself, oh my God. What I thought before was so imprecise. For instance, do you think that before this retreat I thought about the fact that there is no such a thing as subconscious me? Not at all. Most of these revelations come in the talks. causing me, myself, to be surprised. And similarly, like you, I don't like too many changes. I like to have certain continuity. I like to create a complete system that everything can be nicely rounded up. Changes is trouble. We need to change terminology. We need to modify the map of awakening. I would prefer to maintain complete consistency, but what can I do? As Mahatma Gandhi said, I follow the truth, not consistency. Because consistency may be another name for dogmatic thinking. This is how science develops. It has to transcend its past. And there's a resistance. Because the mind has to change. It has to be flexible. That's why Albert Einstein, even though he is the father of the quantum physics, was very resistant to many implications that followed the quantum physics, which is unpredictability. He said that God does not play dice. Everything is so organized and coherent. But perhaps God does play dice. And I think this is what another scientist, Planck, I believe was his name, this is what he told to Einstein, that God does play dice. But you can see even great mind like Albert Einstein, that obviously was in love with the pursuit of truth, still had a hard time to transcend his preconceived notions. Because having these preconceived notions, having that structure, that belief system that we have already created, gives you a sense of security and stability. Now when there are new discoveries, all of that is threatened. So in the same sense, I want to discover truth, I want to deepen understanding in the teaching. But I do not like that certain revelations are somehow in conflict with the understanding that we have already established. There's a sense of unease. I need to change. Not personally, but I need to change in my understanding, the way I present the teaching. So if some of you feel confused or intimidated because there are new concepts, or concepts slightly shift around. Learn flexibility. Learn how to change, because being part of this teaching is all about change. Quite recently, I was saying that the teaching reached some kind of a completion. And it's not entirely untrue, but also it's also not entirely true. The teaching is far from completion. The way I see it, it is just beginning. I wish it was complete, so I could just relax and keep repeating the same things, which is extremely boring, but also comforting. But it is not meant to be. Teaching is always at the beginning. Some of you were with me in Arambol, Pune. I was just beginning to teach. And my understanding of the spiritual reality was rather simplistic. So then I was at the beginning. And now, after all that long journey, and it was indeed, I don't know how many of you can feel it, or even imagine how long a journey it was, how many of you can remember. It was such a long journey. But the thing is, we are still at the beginning. It is the beginning. We have climbed one mountain that before was looming in front of horizon. We still don't know what is ahead, but I am convinced there is another mountain waiting to be climbed. Personally, I'm looking forward to it. I don't just want to lie down on top of that mountain that we have climbed and die. I want to live. I want to continue that journey because I have a passion for life, for truth. the Tashin dies, I die, you die, we all die. I would rather be living. I would rather continue that amazing adventure of that ultimate exploration of the mystery of who we really are. Who we are becoming. Do you want to die? Do you want to retire? If you do, I can just feel sorry for you. Pity for you. Future. Is what enlivens the now. It's not just a goal ahead of you, it is what is giving the meaning to the now. If you die to the future, you're actually dying to the now. You're just a living corpse. And you have died in the eyes of your creator. And he created you, so you are alive. He gave you life so that you are living that life. And living life is not just passing time, it is the unending expansion into the mystery, into truth. So now that we have understood the deeper meaning of the external person, just coming to the point, it is amazing. And if you don't feel amazed, if you don't feel astonished, it means you did not really listen to these talks. You have not understood them, and you have not digested them in your own personal experience, because it is amazing. If I am amazed, why shouldn't be you? Because I am amazed. Even though it comes through me, I'm amazed by what comes through me. Surprised, astonished, and grateful.